I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world. After the United States top intelligence official, Tulsi Gabbard, claimed in the past few days the world is closer to the brink of nuclear annihilation than ever before. But perhaps that won't concern leaders of G7 collapsing economies meeting in Canada today. That's Canada, whose parliament unanimously applauded a member of Hitler's SS after previous revelations it had been sex trafficking teenage girls for ISIS. How even is the G7 the world's strongest economies? The strongest performing currency in the world is Russia's ruble. The strongest economy in Europe by PPP is Russia. Will the summit of the G7 discuss civil war in the USA, continental-wide poverty in the EU and UK, their backing of genocide in Gaza? No, today they will further escalate their proxy war on Russia through Ukraine. Emblematic of that escalation was when thousands of miles away from Washington, Brussels, and Kiev, one of Russia's nuclear-armed strategic bomber fleets was bombed, arguably violating the START treaty. Joining me is the man played by Nicolas Cage in a fictionalized Hollywood weapons fantasy, Lord of War, kidnapped after a sting operation in Thailand, after features in the New York Times calling him the Merchant of Death. Viktor Boot is now a regional politician in Russian opposition party, the Liberal Democratic Party of Russia. The Russian Ulyanovsk region deputy, Viktor Boot, joins me now from Moscow. Viktor, thanks so much for coming on Going Underground. I've got to start by asking you that as a small boy growing up in the USSR, could you have ever foreseen that one day the United States, Britain, and Western Europe would arm a proxy country to bomb Russia's nuclear-armed strategic bomber fleet and there be no real reaction to the NATO powers from Russia?
Well, we're living in a very strange times. Okay, so since Soviet Union collapsed, we see what's happened when unipolar power projection by United States leading world too. So, of course, what's happened with this attack on strategic bombers, first of all, it's not only a kind of very serious attack on Russian nuclear triad, but also a very serious challenge, first of all, for United States. Let's be not mistaken. By this, we know that this operation was not a case which done solely by Ukraine. Ukraine was just a proxy. Everything, as far as we know, was prepared by the British secret services, you know, MI6 or whatever.
Yes, Sergei Lavrov said that, the Russian foreign minister, not offering any proof of that. I know I am British. I'm not standing up for MI6 here. But why is it that you believe it is, and you've said that it is MI6 fingerprints all over this attack?
Look, we know several issues of this. First of all, that's why even American administration and Donald Trump is seriously concerned. Because think of this. If British Secret Service was able to pull up this attack on strategic bombers, which is according to the treaty, must be on the open so satellite of each country can observe their movements. So this is a attempt to sabotage only remaining treaty, which is limits of strategic nuclear, you know, capabilities of both sides. And that's why Tulsi Gabbard, you know, stated that we are closer to nuclear war now than ever before. This is a serious issue. And moreover, it's first of all exposed if in Russia they can able to pull these trucks loaded with the prefab houses and then, you know, their roofs went off and, you know, swarm of drones start, you know, flying out like a, you know, hungry bees out of the, you know, the place. But the issue is, who can guarantee that the same can't happen in the United States? Okay? So this is a break,
you know,
and serious
one
break.
One could say, and I'm sure Pete Hegseth at the Pentagon would say, it wouldn't happen there because the United States would strike back and there's a deterrent. Whereas, I know you're in the opposition party to Putin's party, but everyone knows Vladimir Putin won't retaliate for such a strike against the MI6, in London.
Listen, no, there is a limit because, first of all, we understand that this was, first of all, done right where the negotiation in Istanbul is supposed to happen. So Ukrainians and their British puppet masters definitely needed some nice picture to project that now, you know, Ukraine can pull through and achieve asymmetrical, you know, success where they're losing on the ground. But despite all their efforts, Russian president, you know, doesn't lose his, you know, cool and understand what it is. First of all, after the talks with Trump, where he in detail, you know, informed him what's really happened and who is involved. Now, this is a challenge for global stability, because I don't believe that President Trump and American administration, who now in power and facing way more serious challenges inside than abroad, would like to have escalation to the level where they have to decide whether they're going to be calling for the Chapter 5 of NATO treaty and trying to defend Germany or Britain, you know. And for us, okay, where are we going to hit? It's useless to hit on Ukraine. We understand that this operation with their, you know, intelligence service, with their network of the, you know, implanted agents, with their, you know, detailed radar information, wouldn't possible if it's just Ukrainian, you know, intelligence will do it.
Do you think John Ratcliffe of the CIA must have known about, because they have satellites, clearly, as mandated by the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty of 1994, to look over those strategic nuclear-armed strategic bombers. So the CIA must have known. John Ratcliffe must have known. And Mossad, people are saying, knew. The Israeli agency.
Oh, well, the question is definitely that the American official been informed as this attack start happening. Because, of course, this is one of the system of alerts. Anything happen with the U.S. strategic bombers, Russia have to know. And the same true for the, you know, what's happened to the Russian bombers, strategic ones. So the issue is whether they knew it before, correct? So here we will soon know all details of this operation. We will know also that now the main issue is not, I would say, between America and Russia, is between Trump and globalists. And whatever happened, you know, they couldn't pull Trump into the war with Russia in Ukraine, because he many times already stated, it's not my war, I didn't start it, it's a Biden's war. So he don't want to take this responsibility, despite he could effectively really stop the capacities of Ukrainians, just cutting off supplying, you know, especially lethal long-range missiles like HIMARS, ATACMS, and more important, to stop sharing intelligence formation, because Ukraine 100% relying on all intelligence, satellite mapping, imagery, choosing these from data provided by the American side. So this is very important part of that. So,
I mean, would MI6 have had to tell the United States that it was involved in this operation, if it was actually colluding with this operation in violation of the 1994 Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty?
I don't believe that this would be the case, because then the American administration would say, hey, this is, you know, you can't do this. It's crossing all the limits. I think they just did it, hoping that Trump will jump into this bandwagon, you know, of sharing this success in, you know, brackets of the Ukrainian attack on Russian strategic triad. Well, again, they don't achieve what they wanted. Still we have to face, because it's really changed now all perspective of the how the two countries, United States and Russia, will who is basically responsible for keeping world from the nuclear, you know, world, would act and interact. Because right now, like never before, it requires a really that hotline is used whenever these cases are, you know, happening, that there is no mistake occurs. And then, you know, for Trump now is way more important to start dealing with the globalists who actually shifted with the Democrats.
Yeah, I'll get on to the globalists in a bit, but clear that if it was MI6 that Starmer and Zelensky wanted to provoke Putin in some way, But just in the interim, right now, since the Istanbul talks finished and so on, I've heard nothing from the Kremlin about, or the Duma, about whether the treaty is over, the START treaty, because of this violation. And how can Moscow continue to display the weapons delivery systems, nuclear weapons delivery systems, as part of the START treaty? I've heard nothing at all. I don't know whether it's raised in your regional deputy Dumas, this kind of issue. All we hear is support for Vladimir Putin.
No, listen. My personal take like this: first of all, it's not region Duma's, the business to start, discussing international policy. This is,
Well, it's everyone's business. We're all going to die if this goes wrong.
But first of all, think of this: how I see it personally. So we know that this happened exactly the night before the Istanbul meeting has to go. Okay. Now the question is why it's happened the night before, because calculation was that Russian delegation would say, okay, since you attack us like that, there is no any more negotiations. So they walked out. So then the Ukrainian side, British side, European side, Macron, Steinmeier, and the Schultz will blame Russia. Russia doesn't want a peace. They're not serious about it. And they're going to start crying, like babies about, oh, you see, Russia doesn't want a peace. No, Russian delegation was there. They've been, waiting when Ukrainian side show after consultation with the British mandlers. Okay. And they delivered them whatever proposal Russia supposed to deliver. Then the Russia took a time to really measure the response, and this response only started happening after the telephone calls with Donald Trump. And we need to also give due where it's due, respect where it's due to the understanding that Russia has responsibilities not to act emotionally, because they wanted from us reaction, but Russia did a response. You know the difference between reaction and response? Reaction, you don't really think what you're doing, you're just reacting. And response, where you really understand the situation, measured all.
And this is how primitive. Scenarios. This is how primitive the thinking is in Western European capitals. I mean, Sun Tzu said, "Let the enemy destroy itself." Is that what Russian leadership thinks at the moment, as Western European economies are collapsing through their self-sanctioning?
Basically, we see since the war in Ukraine started, basically Europe start to be Ukrainized, and then start to committing economical suicide and social suicide. So sometimes when you're dealing with a person who is completely, out of his range and want to commit suicide, what you can do? If they start cutting off all the cheap energy sources from Russia, though all their own, business and everybody else would say, hey, we're going to lose our competitiveness if we're going to lose the, cheap energy sources. What's really happened? Germany industry basically in shambles. They can't anymore get back to the place where they used to be, only remaining powerhouse of Europe, because they had an industry, and this industry was in a high demand, especially from China, especially from other countries. And in Russia, we had a huge cooperation with the Siemens and over 5,000 German companies been present. But then, understanding was, okay, since we have such a deep economical relation with Germany, they can influence politics. Apparently, it turns out not. Politics forced them to all shut down and gone out.
Viktor Boot, I'll stop you there. More from the Liberal Democratic Party of Russia regional deputy after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the member of the Legislative Assembly of Ulyanovsk Oblast, Viktor Boot. Viktor, we were talking about the economically suicidal NATO members meeting in Canada today, but continuing to escalate in Ukraine. You've mentioned the globalists a few times and the threat they pose to the democratic will of the United States people. Just describe who you think they are and how exactly they're threatening the Trump presidency. Have they been successful already? We saw Trump on the tarmac the day after the assassination attempt on Vladimir Putin saying, I hadn't even heard about it, as if no one had briefed him. Has he already been defeated again after he lost in this first term he had, where his presidency was destroyed again by, I guess, those you'd call globalists?
Well, you see, the globalists succeeded to sabotage a major part of the first term of Donald Trump, especially with the attempts where he lost influence in the both chamber of their parliament, But now they're just repeating the color revolution experience, which they gained all over the world. And now the, how you say, chicken came back to roost, in the chicken house. So basically, what we're seeing is just beginning of civil war in the United States. Country definitely is divided, maybe half-half. So that half who was planning this disobedience, this chaos, thinking that they're going to push Trump to resign or going to try to impeach him. Because my opinion and my understanding was going to happen eventually, as we know, in any color revolution, now there is should be some victims from the civil population, like it's happened in Kiev, Some secretive snipers going to shoot this heavenly hundred who was died as a result of this protest for civil liberty and for the democracy. So here exactly the same. So now everything depends on the Trump, how he going to do it, whether he would be able to clean up and stop these riots in L.A., regain control of entire city despite of resistance of the California governor.
Yeah, because Trump has been making allegations. I mean, even here in the Middle East, Trump deploys National Guard in Los Angeles to quell protests. Fires. I know the mayor of Los Angeles was previously a deputy at USAID, which organized color revolutions in Hong Kong and who knows where else. You actually believe that's the case, that it's quite likely Trump could be brought down in that kind of conspiracy. I should say, chickens coming home to roost is a phrase famously used by Malcolm X about the John F. Kennedy assassination. You know the United States, albeit a prison cell in the United States. Do you really see it as that, that Trump really does run this risk?
Well, it's a very high risk because remember when the after second term of Obama, Obama didn't went to nowhere. He didn't return to Chicago, just to run his library. He remained in D.C. and what he did, he organized the courses for social activists. Yeah. So I guess for the first term of Trump, only then, according to information, I remember over 40,000 activists being prepared by his school of the activists, social activists, So all this we saw when they did the trial run on this BLM protests, and then they magically stops. We've been expecting that with the election of the Trump would be a riot, but apparently somebody told them not yet, not yet. And now we're seeing that they, initially timidly, but now more and more loudly, because we are now, on the fifth day of these riots. So Trump has to pull the troops, call not only National Guards, but eventually Marines to be there to stop the looting, to protect federal properties. But right now, the control of federal troops is only, just to secure federal buildings. And all the rest is under control of these rioters. So if this would be let continue like this sooner, all this rioters.
Yeah, I mean, this has been recorded before the weekend's events, I should add. I mean, just let's go to Russia as these pictures are obviously being beamed around the world as a kind of implicit so-called mainstream media criticism of Trump. How many Russians do you think have been killed by NATO's proxy forces since the US-UK-EU-backed coup in 2014? How many Russians? I know in the hostage transfers, it was, below 50 compared to the thousands that Russia is repatriating to Ukraine as part of these agreements.
Well, I guess it doesn't matter how many. The issue is that Russians have been killed, whether the Russians in Ukraine, who, because of the treason of the Gorbachev and Yeltsin, woke up one day outside their motherland, you know, like because the Russians become the biggest divided nation in the world with the collapse of Soviet Union. Over 30 million Russians found themselves that apparently they're living in a foreign country where the local authorities start, you know, declaring them non-citizens, you know, start to practice whatever Hitler was practicing of Aryization of the population, start to forbidding them to write, to teach their, you know, native language, to speak on their native language, like we see what's going on in Ukraine, and right to live and, you know, have at least the freedom to religion. This happened not
only
in Ukraine.
Of course, but I think I'm getting it. You're an opposition party member, and clearly Putin is being very careful. He got some blame for not acting sooner as Russian speakers were killed in Donbass. Yes. He didn't go in sooner than he might have, trusted the Minsk agreement.
Look.
Now what's the mood? And how stable is it? And are there people, maybe your party, the Liberals, so-called, let alone the Communist Party, saying Putin has to be provoked, should respond to the provocations of MI6 and the rest of them?
Russian character. We have a very important stuff, and we have troubles. When we're going through the war, we shouldn't criticize our leadership. We need to be united like never before. This was a main slogan in our party. We said we need to stand shoulder to shoulder. Our party was the first one to come up with this initiative to unite all pro-Russia, pro-patriotic forces, and to support our armed forces, to support our government to achieve the victory. And after we've done that, you know, we're going to, of course, do necessary criticism to whatever was done wrong. But when we are fighting, there is no room to start inner fighting. Or if we, as a opposition party now, will start criticize what was wrong done or what was not, we only will help our enemies. So right now, we are united, whether it's a party of power, United Russia, whether it's communist, whether it's, you know, new people, or LDPR, we're all there to supporting, you know, decision to start this war. We're supporting decision to finish it only when we achieve our goals.
Talking about finishing it, I understand that. I noticed there's a build-up in Moldova to save the people of Transnistria before NATO provocations in Moldova. It's not far to Odessa from there. Do you think there are discussions at the moment in Moscow about whether now to open that front to Odessa and the time has come for this?
Majority of Russian people think we need to not only take Odessa, we need to, you know, take all Ukraine and create safety buffer zone in the West and Eastern Europe, like it used to be during the Warsaw Pact. Okay, but let's be realistic. Let's see the reality, and let's also understand very simple logic that the NATO is at least, potential-wise, maybe 6-7 times bigger on population-wise. Eventually, they have more resources, financial resources. But Russia has more natural resources, has more ingenious population. Who knows? And the spirit of Russian people will never be broken, despite all attempts of the West to conquer us. So this is our, you know, points where we based our understanding what's going on. And I'm fully support what government doing, despite...
So you don't know, basically. I mean, Victor, obviously people are going to know that film, Lord of War, starring Nicolas Cage as you. And I know you've been a long critic of the fantasy of that film. How do you think Hollywood are going to already be preparing fictionalized fantasy films about the Ukraine war to create the impression that somehow this whole war is an imperial Russian war of expansion, and really the secret Russian plan is to invade London.
Well, unfortunately, Hollywood lost its capacity even to produce quality content for recent 10 years. We saw that Trump tried to put even tariffs on foreign movies, yeah, because Hollywood went and sell out their soul to the China market and get the, you know, everything production which can be sold in China. For them, business is the number one. I don't think anymore they're even capable to produce a quality propaganda movie like they used to be. Yes, they've been very successful to portraying Russia as a, you know, very green place where there is only poverty and nothing happening, you know. But reality is always different than that. So I guess, you know, now other countries will start produce movies. And those movies will take more and more, you know, attention of the world population that, you know, Hollywood production.
Who would you have play? Who would you have play Zelensky in a Hollywood film that was accurate?
I think if Zelensky survived, and now with all these techniques, eventually they're going to get some, you know, avatar, or they're going to just let AI.
But you think Zelensky's a dead man walking?
Of course, and since get-go, it was clear because, look, Zelensky will end up, you know, killed by own, you know, guards because, first of all, he knows too much. He tried to blackmail everybody around because he thinks if he provide a cocaine, high-quality cocaine, to the three European leaders in the train. And
we don't know about that, though. Victor Booz.
We don't know, but, yeah, I can make allegations.
You can, but I think they said it was a piece of tissue paper. Victor Booz, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
And that's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by the UK-US EU-armed genocide in Gaza. We'll be back on Saturday with a brand new show. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.